Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
Bears, 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 football, football, football.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
Matt Nagy was named Coach of the Year by the Pro Football Writers Association.
I do think he's got the potential to be a top 10 coach. I think when you look at the AFC, yeah, I mean, there's Belichick, there's John Harbaugh, there's Mike Tomlin, Andy Reid, Doug Peterson, yeah, he's got a Super Bowl ring. And he has the same sort of infectious enthusiasm that makes other people better. And that's what you're looking for. And that's Matt Nagy's greatest strength right now. He makes everybody around him better. He has in the past year. He was deserving. I think he's definitely the best coach in the division right now. And he's a top 10 coach.
Mully and Hall.
I think they're kind of kindred spirits in a sense.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
What are the chances of getting...
It's impossible.
Bryce Harper.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Here's my new fear. My new theory is that the Cubs are going to jump in, but not on Bryce Harper. The Cubs have Albert Almora Jr., bestest buddy chum of one Manny Machado. The Cubs need Manny Machado a hell of a lot more than they need Bryce Harper. The Cubs could jump in. Manny could live in the subdivision with his brother-in-law and his bestest buddy, John Jay.
This is such a Sox fan thing.
While also... Well, nobody has really asked about Machado. He jumps in to tell you, no Harper. But at 175, are you telling me that that's not what Theo is secretly laying in the weeds hoping to do?
Mully and Hall Flashback.
We are delighted to welcome in Tom Ricketts.
I'm sure Theo's got a few moves left in him.
I hope it's not so.
Mully and Hall.
It's a hell of a team.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Yeah, the White Sox fan in me is being slowly surrounded. And I've come to the conclusion that only a Harper is asked about, but Manny Machado would fit great on the Cubs. It would give you cover if Chris Bryant's shoulder is bad. It would give you cover if Addison Russell isn't welcomed back, and it would certainly make the lineup better. It would cure some of the hitting woes. It would
and that's what
answer
you think
a lot of problems.
Tom Ricketts was referring to when he said Theo's got a few moves left.
Well, I know everyone just jumps at the idea that that it's all about relief pitchers and all that stuff. And I, you know, listen, they could use some. I'm not saying they could.
Definitely, they need some.
No doubt about it. But
see what the Yankees Cubs did with their bullpen.
If you follow what, yeah, they just made some more moves. Jeez. If you follow Theo and his career, he's an opportunist, if I might add. Right, he's the kind of guy that sees a possibility open up and jumps at it. And then they make a move that maybe you didn't expect them to make. He's the kind of, this would be right up his alley to kind of, you know, waylay the plans of the White Sox by stealing away their guy because the contract isn't maybe as good as it might have been. And if you're a guy like Machado, wouldn't you want to sign up for another trip to the World Series and maybe MVP type season and maybe improve your odds of getting the big
and
money?
And Chicago is where his brother-in-law lives.
That's what I'm saying. He's got his best buddies here. So, this is his. This, Chicago's home for him now.
So the Sox,
the Miami
really just,
connection on the
so
south
basically
side.
The Sox just paved the way for the Cubs to sign Machado is what they did.
This is the fear, isn't
they
it?
They brought Alonso to Chicago, made it more comfortable for him.
Yes.
Albert Almora Jr. is there. It's his buddy, longtime lifelong friend.
They all moved to the same subdivision and they all have unbelievable block
so
parties.
Let's just we'll ignore every sort of indication and comment from Theo Ed Ricketts offseason.
No. What we don't ignore is the history of this group, and that is to take advantage of the market when it is depressed.
It's the history of this group which is keeping them out of these kind of discussions this winter. It's the recent history. It's last year's free agent misses, Yu Darvish, Brandon Morrow, Tyler Chatwood.
Boy, Chatwood was a real miss.
Yeah.
You could argue that the other two guys were hurt, but I don't know what you argue with Chatty.
Well, I think that there's no explanation for it. I mean, that was a guy that just fell apart.
I blame Jim Hickey.
Jeez. That's just, you're just a clown.
Well, that's a good topic for Tommy Hotovy, Cubs pitching coach, we'll talk to next hour.
And by all accounts, you has reported to camp already, right? He's already in Arizona getting ready.
Well, you've seen some video of him looking like a healthier Yu Darvish, a guy that is encouraging to see. Yeah, I don't know if he's still in Arizona. I don't know where he's.
You think he's at the convention?
Is he at the convention?
I'm asking you.
I'm not sure.
We know that John Lester's not going.
We know Anthony Rizzo's not going.
John Lester's not going because Anthony Rizzo's on his honeymoon.
And Addison Russell's not going because he can't be within the jurisdiction. I don't know why Addison Russell.
You know why Addison Russell isn't going because he's undergoing whatever kind of therapy, treatment, whatever it is he's undergoing, and they're trying to get him up and running.
He's
and
on
that,
suspension.
That might not be a good place for him. Yu Darvish, is that a good place for him? How will Cub fans treat Yu Darvish? He's not going? He's not going to be there. Kevin said no.
Not according to this list that I've got here, but Taylor Davis will be there.
Staring at everybody.
Staring
creepily.
Weirdly, yes.
But you know, I got to tell you, I don't think Darvish should go. I don't think that's a good spot for him. What would be the value of having him go in and you know, it seemed like...
Convention is about fans being able to express themselves. It's a positive experience, right? That's why they exist.
And he might not have a positive experience because... Right. And remember, didn't we go through this idea that you felt unloved and felt that there was a lack of understanding about what he was going through physically from the fans?
Maybe so.
But maybe or not.
Yeah, that was definitely part of it. But I think that the whole... idea for these conventions is about renewal, the beginning of a season, the beginning, everything kind of, everyone starts fresh, right? For the most part. Well, heck, aren't they going to introduce Machado? that's what you have them doing tonight? When they opening ceremonies.
Darvish is on the list, Kevin? Is he on the list of attendees or not?
He is not on the list.
He's not on the list.
No, but they might unveil the blockbuster offseason signing of Daniel Descalzo this weekend. That's the big ticket acquisition. Trot him out there, wave the flag, get everybody excited for the season.
That's really so not fair, by the way.
Here are a response to some of the points I've tried to make here. Mully, you're drunk. The Cubs blew their free agent cash on Cole Hamels. They had to clean up the Darvish Chatwood mess. And then the next guy says, Mully, that would be a real kick in the rocks for the White Sox fans like me. So it's bound to happen.
Yeah, I don't know where you are coming up with this, but I'll go with it. I think that it would be so contrary to everything that we've heard and seen. And
I totally agree with that. But wouldn't it be still within the MO, if you will, the modus operandi of a guy like Theo to kind of lay in the weeds and then make a move?
To be sort of a stealth move at the last minute when nobody expects
it. When there is opportunity. When, you know, Manny Machado, it would appear, is going to get an under-market value contract because he's 26 years old and he's a future Hall of Famer. And it's, you know, he's coming off a bad World Series. He's coming off a bad play at first base, stepping on a guy. He's coming off the comments about not being Johnny Hustle. And again, I thought it was Charlie Hustle, but whatever. He's not the guy that likes to hustle. And he's tried to clarify that, but the market isn't there for him. Is the market there for Harper? It doesn't appear that either guy has signed yet. But I would argue that Manny Machado would help the Cubs a hell of a lot more than Bryce Harper would because of the contracts, because of the block that you have
there. They have
a
greater need, though, in the outfield than they do the infield. I think the Cubs do. Because
that's interesting because I would argue that they have a greater need in the infield because of the uncertainty of both Chris Bryant due to injury. And again, you know, he didn't have any offseason surgery. It's just you're hoping that time heals that wound and time
they have
heals.
More proven players in the infield than they do the outfield.
But Addison Russell, is he one of them?
No,
what is he?
But you've got Rizzo, you've got Javi, you've got Chris Bryant in the infield. And in the outfield, you've got an overpaid Jason Hayward. You've got and two guys who need to come through in Albert Elmora and Kyle Schwarber. Those are the guys when
– would the outfield look if you moved Chris Bryant back there, you moved Machado in at third, and you had maybe Hayward, you know, if you had to, move him into center, whatever it was you need to do?
Well, then you're getting an outfielder then. I mean, if you're signing Manny Machado, you're saying you're basically helping the outfield.
I say you're getting better defensively and you're helping the outfield. I mean, I'm just – I live in fear. I don't deny that. And it's how could my plans be foiled? Well, that's
so at this point in time, would you say the Cubs have a better chance of signing Manny than the Sox? Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I think the Sox have a better chance because they're the only ones that have laid an offer out. But what I'm saying, I think there's a lot going on here, David. I think that you know, we asked the question that has been posed, should Manny sit a year out? That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Absolutely, unequivocally, no. If he does, he's being a martyr for the game, and that doesn't make any sense to me. Why would he want to do that? What he should do is sign the best deal he can get. But if the best deal he can get is at the White Sox with presumably a 3-year out, maybe he would, maybe somebody out there would look at those numbers that are being floated and say, you know, that's a pretty good deal. We could fit that in. We could fit that in over 3 years because we, you know, the timing of the contracts and all the rest of it might work out for us, and it would get us closer to a World Series.
And Manny, here's $100 million over the next 3 years. What do you think?
What do you think? Wouldn't that be better than anything else? Don't you sign up for that? 312-644-6767. Mike's in St. Charles. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. Great conversation this morning while I was out walking. I wanted to talk the quality value, Machado versus Harper. They got $100 million on the White Sox to spend. When you look back 4 years, you see every stat, every single stat in Machado's favor on the average, except for runs scored, and that's probably because he played with the Nationals versus Machado playing with the Orioles. You take that $100 million, you spend on Machado, and get two other guys. You still got a little cap space for maybe a closer, and I think the value's better.
There's no cap. There's just a luxury tax, and I think that if they get Machado, they're over the luxury tax. I mean, they're pretty close right now. They're the second highest payroll in baseball at $205 million right now heading into this year. Yeah, all those things sound plausible. They're possible. I don't know about plausible. When Tom Ricketts said what he said yesterday, he did not sound like a guy that was the reserving, you know,
didn't you think
budget
I'm
space
sure
for
got a few moves but, left in him.
I don't think he meant a $200 million move left in him.
Well, it wouldn't be. It would be a 3-year deal effectively. Listen, I'm just throwing out ideas. You know, I'm conspiracy theorist today. Dustin has been around me too long.
Got Rhodes stink on you.
I am what you would call a Rhodes scholar. I have learned at the feet of the master, and I'm coming up with a warped idea.
If you keep this up, Dan Lozano is going to issue a statement naming you by name and saying,
how is this bad for them?
But taking a 3-year deal?
How would that be bad for him?
Well, I mean, obviously they want a longer a 10-year deal. They want an 8-year deal. Yeah, they want 8 years, $250 million.
Okay, I'm talking about an opt out. I'm talking about, you know, knowing that you get it's the same thing he'd do if he signed the deal on the South side, right?
Well, he's got one deal on the table. Out, but if he didn't want to opt out, he still has a security of a 7 or 8 year deal.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah.
So that's what you have to do.
Okay.
Here's the thing. The money is just so shockingly low to me that I think that's why the agent is so peeved. It's really bad for the game because, again, you are restricting these players. You're holding them back. Look at Chris Bryant. Now, stay down in the minors for another year. The Sox are about to do it with Eloy Jimenez. It's being done all over baseball. So you slow down the clock on when these guys hit free agency. And then when they hit free agency, no matter what their prospects are for the future, no matter that they're, you know, generational talents, you're not going to pay them? I mean, that's bad for the game.
Well, it is bad for the game. I'm not sure that I totally buy the idea that the offer is as low as $175 million only. I still think that there's got to be more to it than that. There's got to be higher in terms of the other reports we heard about escalators and incentives and things that probably bring that closer to over $200 million, which you think is still very affordable for a team like the Cubs.
312-644-6767 is the number. We'll talk about this moving forward. We're going to shift gears. We're going to bring in Casey Johnson. We'll talk about how awful the Bulls have been. And I guess, now that Cleveland is the only team in their sights, the Bulls heading to the basement in a hurry and getting blown out by the Nuggets.
Well, they're in the basement. Yeah, company in the basement. You can have two other friends with you in the basement.
No, you need to be in the sub-basement if you want that number one overall pick, right? I mean, aren't we in full-blown tank mode now, David?
Do you call it tank when it's not on purpose?
Well, whatever it is.
If you're bad just because you're bad, is that a tank?
Well, do you want them to get better? Should we want them to get better?
You can want all you want. I don't think it's going to happen.
But given that, then don't you want them to bottom out? And I mean sub-basement bottom out?
They're close. They haven't won since December.
It's a problem. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
Banks it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Do not do it like that!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh my goodness! Did you not get the memo?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score. Always a delight to welcome in our guy, KC Johnson. He's in Denver covering the Bulls for the Chicago Tribune, the fine Tribune basketball man. Good morning, KC.
Morning, KC.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
I just saw that that Netflix says that 80 million accounts have watched the movie Bird Box, and I was thinking a sequel might be Bulls Box, where all the fans have to, you know, cover their eyes rather than watch what's going on the
look
court.
Away.
It's rough.
I always tell people I'm paid to watch, so you don't have to.
So
it's bad. I always also joke that having cut my teeth early in my beat writing career on the Tim Floyd era, that I'm sometimes numb to poor play or what have you. But this is bad, man. This is bad. I mean, they made the coaching change, right? And they cited competitive spirit and spirit and energy, and we're not judging wins and losses. That's fine. I mean, wins and losses, that, you know, nine straight losses, that's bad, but whatever, you're in a rebuild. But it's a non-competitive losses that are accumulated now, and so now where do you go? What do you do? I mean, obviously you're committed to Jim here, but you know, eight of the 16 losses since they made the coaching change have been by 17 points or more. And they have a healthier roster, so these are pretty troubling times right now for the Bulls.
Yeah, and it's only the second time in franchise history through 45 games they've been this bad, KC. And I think you hear Zach LaVine try to articulate it last night post-game, and he called it demoralizing. How does this team find a bright spot if there is? There really aren't any. I mean, and where does it go from here? Is Jim Boylan on a daily basis growing more frustrated, or how has his rhetoric changed?
No, I mean, Jim's pretty true to who he is, and this is, you know, he's waited for this chance for a long time, so he's going to commit to what he believes in. As far as where it goes from here, David, I mean, that's what we're asking players, and something's got to break here. Something's got to give, because what's happening right now is not working, okay? It's as simple as that. And you mentioned the 10-35 record, second worst in franchise history after 45 games. That's bad, and that's fine, you know. They knew they were going to be bad this year. They knew they were going to lose. They didn't think they were going to be this bad. Okay, so now you have the bonus of maybe you get a better draft pick than you thought. So take that out of the equation. It's the fact that they're not even competing right now. They're getting blown out on, you know, more games than not. That's the troubling aspect to all this. I mean, last season, 27-55. Yes, it was painful to watch. Yes, there were some very low moments. But by and large, for the most part, that team competed. You know, they were winning games down the stretch where Sean Kilpatrick was throwing in crazy shots. I mean, they played hard. And I'm not seeing that on a consistent basis from this group at a time when, as I mentioned, they're getting healthier. And it's just, you know, a lot of the season also was based on the core and the player development of Dunn, LaVine, and Markkanen. And again, you just don't see those three, except for that Indiana Pacers overtime loss, you just don't see those three clicking too often together for extended stretches. So, you know, I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. This is pretty bad.
And Zach LaVine, the quote you had from him about opponents kind of licking their chops and looking at the schedule, marking the game. I mean, this is where players now can load up against the Bulls. I mean, that's the kind of – that becomes almost – when you haven't won a game in a year, I know it's just a month, but that kind of becomes something that is in the head of the opponents and maybe the players.
Yeah, and you know, one thing we've heard consistently from players throughout the season is, you know, we need to learn how to win because we're a young team and we've never won. You know, you're basing this rebuild on young players that have potential – but don't know how to win games. And so if you keep getting not only losing, but keep getting your hat handed to you, that just sets in and, you know, such a culture that just is kind of self-defeating and just kind of repeats itself. If you're in games and competitive and losing games, yeah, it hurts and yeah, it's difficult, but you know, there's something to build on, and you're starting to learn things about that down the stretch, how to close out games, things like that. What do you learn from a 30-point loss where you're down by 40? And what do you learn by, you know, following a game plan where you're going under screens and the Nuggets are, you know, shooting three-pointers like it's a layup line? And what do you learn by, you know, an offensive night where, you know, marking it gets going early, but Dunn and LaVine just don't show up? And, you know, LaVine's banged up a little bit around. He doesn't want to talk about it publicly. He's playing through a little something. It's not serious, but, and I'm not trying to give the guy excuse, but I do give him credit for, he's not talking about it much. I had one line in my story today, but he's playing through a little something on his shooting shoulder where he banged it recently. But it's just, I just keep coming back to it's bad. There's got to be more competitive fight from these guys.
Casey, I know you had a deadline last night, so I'm not sure if you were there when Zach LaVine addressed this specifically, but Sam Smith had something in Bulls.com about how, you know, Jim Boylan mentioned that the loss of Justin Holiday may have contributed to the lack of toughness and the fact that they have struggled a little bit of late. And that when posed with that, Zach LaVine said, yeah, Justin is a real good player, but I don't think he's someone you take him off a team and he's like LeBron James. And I think that speaks for itself. And any disconnect growing between Boylan and the players, because when he says things that just don't make sense, that they resonate in the locker room, or is that making too much out of that?
No, I mean, I don't think it's making too much out of it. I mean, I was there for both comments. I didn't write about Justin Holiday because I kind of felt like Justin Holiday, you know, it is an interesting quote, but I mean, Zach's right. Justin Holiday, no offense, you know, Justin Holiday is a good NBA rotation player, but he's not a LeBron James.
Exactly.
So losing Justin Holiday to me is like kind of an afterthought. I mean, again, he played very well for this team.
Justin Holiday's not walking through that door, Casey.
he played very well for this team, particularly this season. But you know, to point to him as like an elite defender that you're losing, and that's why things have gone off the rails here. I don't see it, man. I mean, Justin Holiday wasn't in the future plan, so. No, but that's a connection I hadn't thought of last night on deadline. It's an intriguing one. Look, we all know the high-profile incident the first week with the players' pushback on the practice. I do feel like the team got to a better place that night from following the two-hour team meetings. But, you know, when you're losing and you're getting your brains beat in, there's slippage then. And right now people are unhappy. And so, you know, it's on Jim to make sure to listen to his team, and it's on the team to play at a more competitive level, and they've got to pull through this together because Jim, you know, like I said, when you make the coaching change, you're committed to this guy, so something's got to give here, and they both sides need to be better.
The internal exiles, Jabari Parker, played again. He had 15 points in 18 minutes, and Robin Lopez back on the court as well, 17 points in 19 minutes. All forgiven there? No trade coming? What goes on with them?
Well, Lopez only was back because Carter was out. Carter told us that he expects to play on Saturday. You know, maybe they'll be conservative and sit him down one more game. It's not serious, although he does have a splint on his thumb. So Lopez, my assumption will be that Lopez will take a seat again once Carter is back and Jabari is in that big man rotation now with Portis Markkanen and Carter, and you know, he's doing what he does. He scores, and you know, I think my feelings are pretty well documented about how I thought that whole situation was handled. You know, I know he's not a perfect player. I know he had some issues on defense early in the season, and also his practice habits weren't always the best. But I wrote that column. You know, I just had trouble watching the second unit go out there with Archie Diacono and Blakeney and Harrison, and just not giving a $20 million player who's a former number two overall pick of the draft, who obviously can score a chance. I didn't understand why they pulled the plug on him that quickly. I mean, I understood it initially. Look, Jim wants to take over, set a new culture. Maybe you're sending a message, but at some point, to me, it got punitive. And you know, the fact that he's out there doing what he does, I mean, I think you know, that helps the team. I mean, this is the worst offense in the league, and you've got a versatile scorer sitting on the bench. So it's, from my perspective, it's good that he's back in the rotation.
We'll let you go, Casey. Zach LaVine says we have to do something. Any ideas what that would be?
Well, that's exactly what we asked him. I mean, yeah. You know, and obviously players, you know, we asked Markkanen the same thing. I mean, come on, you know, we've all danced this dance a million times. Beat writers are running out of answers. Players are running out of answers. I mean, when you're down by 40, there's just not much to say. I mean, it just, I guess, you know, the one thing you pull out of the postgame locker room is Markkanen, you know, vowing that everyone's going to stick together to pull through this because nobody's going to feel sorry for them. So, you know, you pull that shred out of there and you go back to work today. The schedule does lighten up a little bit. I mean, we should acknowledge that this was obviously a tough stretch. I mean, they're playing good teams. It was a road trip. West Coast trips are always difficult for this team.
Thin air in Denver. Hard place to play.
But they really should have.
I'm just saying.
They really should have more wins than the Bears right now.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Or somebody was saying some of the state schools, like, because the Bulls won the NCAA championship. I saw that on Twitter. I don't know.
Missouri Valley's up for grabs.
Hey, the Ramblers are back in charge. Back on.
There you go.
All right, Casey. You're the best.
Hang in there, buddy. I'll talk to you.
That's Casey Johnson.
Yeesh.
I have Duke favorite over the Bulls.
Well, you know, I, and I'm not joking. I used to hear that year in and year out about the worst team in the league.
I might too, Joe, but Zion's going to sit out.
Wendell Carter out again?
Zion's going to sit out for the draft.
Well, sometimes you learn by sitting, too.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. Joe Fortenbaugh is our man in Vegas by way, of course, San Francisco Bay Area. He does 95.7 The Game, Sharp 600 podcast, and he is a remarkable human. Good morning, Joe!
Morning, Joe.
Good morning, gentlemen. As always, it's a pleasure to be on the program. Championship weekend's here. We got 3 games left, which, actually, if you're a total degenerate, you can bet the Pro Bowl, but that's a story for another day. That's a conversation for another day.
I will not ask any questions about the Pro Bowl other than, do you actually follow who plays in it and who doesn't? Because people pull out so often, and I don't even know the roster yet.
I don't. And I know there are guys that bet it, and there are guys that'll talk about angles and all this. I don't follow it. I don't. Look, when the initial Pro Bowl rosters come out, being in sports talk radio, we talk about the snubs, we talk about the guys that are in. But once this event actually takes place, I'm not watching it, I'm not betting on it, I'm not going to analyze it or talk about it. To me, it's like a step just below how bad the baseball hot stove has been. Now, I know with the Machado situation, you got stuff to talk about in Chicago, Cubbies looking to win another World Series. But to be honest, man, this is part of baseball's problem. You know, free agency in the NFL is huge. Free agency in the NBA is huge. The trade deadline, like, these are events that have nothing to do with what's happening on the field, and yet they garner a ton of attention. I don't even know when the hot stove started. I don't know when free agency opened. It's been, what, 2 months, and none of these guys have signed, and here we are getting ready to start talking about pitchers and catchers. Like, it's sorry to go on the rant, but baseball's got to make some changes with this. Because you got to take advantage of these moments. This is the stuff that gets people excited. Everybody's 0-0. Even the losing team fan bases can get excited.
True, but would we be talking about it more or less if Machado and Harper had signed in December? I mean, we're talking about baseball and the possibilities and all the teams that they might go to and all the chances that they might sign with here, they might sign there. So there's that element too, Joe. I mean, we are talking about it.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you guys at least have one of the big names attached to you, I guess. Being here in the Bay Area, what, the A's, they're not going to do anything financially.
Kyler Murray? Giants are so,
that's a great draft pick on that one right there. What? You got to be kidding me. And then here's the best part about this. They get on a plane with MLB marketing executives to go meet the kid to try to convince them to play baseball. Let me tell you something, MLB marketing executives. your best player is a guy named Mike Trout. Nobody knows what Mike Trout sounds like. Like, if you're driving right now, don't do this. But if you're not driving, close your eyes and picture Mike Trout's voice. Can you hear it? No, you have no idea who Mike Trout is. But you can picture Peyton Manning's voice. You can picture Tom Brady's voice. You know what all these stars sound like. Baseball does a horrible job of marketing its marquee talent. It's no surprise the guy wants to play football. He just won the Heisman Trophy. Who wants to ride a bus for 6 years going around the Southwest playing double A?
Fair point.
All right, let's get to the games.
All right, let's go in chronological order. So generally during these segments, I'll come on with a lot of trends and statistics to back up why I like the teams and positions I like. But to be honest with you, I know enough and I've watched enough, much like most of the listeners have, that there's not a whole lot of research I need to do here. These are eye test games for me. And in the first game, the eye test says Saints all the way. I'm going to lay the points with the Saints. -3 is out there right now, so you can lay the field goal. Now, don't get caught overvaluing the Rams because of what you saw against Dallas last week. A lot of people think Dallas is a good football team. They were okay. They're above average. But look at their split. Solid at home, below average on the road. So they travel on the road to play the Rams, who are rested, who made the mistake the year before of falling flat to the Falcons in the playoffs. So you're going to get a good punch from this team. But here's the biggest problem for the Cowboys in this game. They were poorly coached by Jason Garrett. What I mean by that is this. Two ways to generate pressure in the NFL. You're either going to blitz, or you're going to have a really solid front four like Chicago that can get home without blitzing. Khalil Mack, Hicks, all those guys. The Cowboys can get home with four, so they don't blitz. But if you're not going to blitz, what you're going to do is stunt. And stunt means take a guy on the defensive line who's lined up in a gap, and when the ball snaps, he's going to shoot through another gap. The key is to confuse the offensive line, cause a little bit of chaos in the backfield, maybe get the running back to go through the wrong lane. The problem for the Cowboys is that they tip their hand as to when they're stunting. Their defensive tackles will move outside, and the Rams knew it was coming. They were very well prepared for this. So they would see it. They would relay the information to Goff. Goff would check at the line of scrimmage into a run, and that's why you saw Gurley and C.J. Anderson, of all people, getting 8-9 yards down the field before anyone put a hand on them. That is not going to happen against the New Orleans Saints for a variety of reasons. Number one, the Saints are much better prepared than the Cowboys were. Okay, that's first and foremost. Number two, Jared Goff is not a guy that makes a lot of decisions at the line of scrimmage. Sean McVay likes to watch the defense get set, and then he radios in what he wants Goff to do. It's very much like college football. The problem is that can work in L.A., but if you're going to play in the Voodoo Dome with all that crowd noise in the NFC Championship game, it's going to be very difficult to communicate with McVay, then communicate with your receivers, your line, and your backs, and then get the ball snapped, and then execute the play call. This is part of the reason why the Rams fell behind in such a big hole the first time these two teams met. So bottom line, I don't have a whole lot of faith in the Rams and Jared Goff playing great. I think the running game is going to be neutralized because the Rams are going to have to throw the ball late like they did in game one because they're going to be trailing. And for the Saints, look, they played one bad quarter against Philly. At newsflash, they hadn't played anyone in 3 weeks. They rested the starters in week 17. They had the bye. Of course they were going to come out flat. Teams need to be careful of this. Drew Brees underthrew. Drew Brees, the most accurate quarterback in NFL history, underthrows dramatically the first pass of the game, and it's intercepted. After that game, it was like a plus 300 yardage differential from quarters two through four. The Saints own that game. Now, yeah, Lutz missed the field goal late and gave Philly a chance to win, but the Saints are a much better football team here. I'm laying the three with New Orleans. In the AFC Championship game, similar situation. I'll lay the field goal with Kansas City. New England is a slow football team. Brady's slow in the pocket. The offense is slow to develop. Gronkowski's slow to get out of his stance. The defense is slow. This is not the New England team we remember from previous years. They are a slow football team. And they have exceptional coaching and exceptional quarterback play, which has gotten them here, but they are very slow. And that doesn't translate well against a team like Kansas City. People are talking about weather meaning something in this game. Both teams have to play in the weather. And this is why every year during the NFL draft, we always hear about a quarterback prospect's arm strength, because you got to deal with weather. The Chiefs have the guy with the strongest arm in the NFL playing quarterback for them, and he shows up in big spots. Now, I know in that first New England game, he turned the ball over a few times. Fine, but he's resilient. There's a difference between watching a guy like Jared Goff, who consistently looks rattled, and a guy like Patrick Mahomes, who's just a gunslinger in the purest form. He'll make a mistake, but he'll go right back on the field and try to make a play. That's what you got to love about the kid.
New England love right now, and I think they're overvalued in this game, is based on this recency bias that has taken place over the last month, and it's all tied to the Chargers. The Chargers beat the Chiefs about a month ago on Thursday Night Football. Coming off that game, everyone was talking about how the Chargers were going to win the Super Bowl. The next week, the Chargers host the Ravens. They get beat. Everyone starts talking about how the Ravens are going to be this really dangerous out. So 2 weeks later, Chargers go to Baltimore in the playoff game. Everyone wants to bet Baltimore except us. Remember, we were on the Chargers, boys. And the Chargers go in, and they shut down this lousy read option because the read option doesn't work in the NFL. Pro football players can tackle. Pro football players are fast. This is not the Big 12. So they shut down Lamar Jackson. They win that game. Now everyone's talking about how the Chargers are going to beat the Patriots, except us. Remember, we were talking about the Patriots. Why? They're playing at home. They've had 2 weeks to prepare. The Chargers have to go back to the East Coast for the second time in as many weeks, and they get stuck with the early start time. The Patriots jump all over them. Anthony Lynn's a nice motivator, but he never at any point made any in-game adjustments. The defense just sat in that zone coverage and got destroyed all game by Brady. And, of course, the Chargers get rolled. The Chargers were the more talented team, but the problem is that Anthony Lynn and Charger ownership, they love to go cheap when it comes to coaching. If they ever get a really good tactician in there, they'll win a Super Bowl because they've got more talent than anyone in the AFC. But they're very poorly coached, and they're very poorly prepared. And they got exposed in that Patriot game. So now everyone thinks the Patriots are back. Don't fall for it. Lay the three with the Chiefs. Lay the three with New Orleans. If you want to tease both of them, you can, but a rule of thumb is you shouldn't tease through zero to the other side. If you want to do a money line parlay, Chiefs to Saints, I'd be doing that as well. Money line parlay, so you just need both teams to win, tie them together. I like the home teams. I'm not overthinking the games this week.
Fair enough, Joe. It's a good solution. All right, buddy.
Great conversation, boys. Always love talking with you. Enjoy the games this weekend.
All right, Joe, you're the best. That's our guy, Joe Fortenbaugh, 95.7 The Game in the Bay Area, the Sharp 600 podcast.
I don't know that he's given the Rams running game enough credit, especially going up against the Saints defense is playing without Rankins in the middle there, and I think that could be the way that if the Rams are going to win, it's going to be because of that. I don't know that they will. Yep. I'm still picking the Saints, but if the Rams come out and they do in the running game what they did last week, then it could be a far different game, far different outcome. That's how you take the crowd out of it. You run the ball down the other team's throat.
I think it's going to be a combination of what we think. I think instead of the two young guys or the two old guys, it's going to be some variation within that. That's just, again, I picked the same game you picked, and I'm sticking with it. But
yeah, I've got the Saints and the Patriots. I got Brady versus Breeze in the Super Bowl. That'd be fun to talk about.
A lot of great stories. The game should be good.
Yeah.
Mully and Haw, we're going to shift gears a little bit, and we will make your day next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.